Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Shadows at the Door is an audio drama podcast designed to scare and delight you. While rarely explicit, it is nonetheless produced with an adult audience in mind. Welcome to Season 2, Episode 4. Now, so far in this season, we've brought you another chapter in the Professor Troughton story, a new take on Slender Man, and a classic M.R. James story. And today, we have something a little different, and rather exciting. Yes, we have a brand new story from Stoker Award-nominated writer and friend of the podcast, Gemma Amore. Now, in Season 1, Gemma brought us the story Let Sleeping Gods Lie, and listeners asked for more. And we delivered. Gemma did. As such, we are proud to present our first guest writing spot of Season 2. David and I also invited Gemma to join us for the after-story discussion. Do listen to that if you want to hear a mutiny unfold. But for now, on with this delightfully macabre tale, which Gemma has named Message in a Bottle.
Look at that stupid dog. He's completely soaked. Baxter! Baxter! Come on out of the ocean, you daft thing, you filthy!
He's having fun, leave him be.
Well, you can give him a bath later then.
Fine, you can cook dinner then.
Well, I mean, it is my turn. You fancy spaghetti bolognese?
Is it Sunday, David?
At the risk of falling for a trick question, yes, you know very well it is.
Then spaghetti bolognese it is, because you always cook on Sundays and you always make spaghetti bolognese. I already brought the ingredients and left them out for you.
Well, that's what you call teamwork, I guess.
I prefer to think of it as a symbiotic relationship. Is that what it's called?
No, no, love. That would imply that one of us is a parasite. Actually, now that I come to think of it...
Oi, you cheeky bastard.
Oh, God, what's he found now? He's barking at something in the water.
I don't know, I can't tell from here. Dead seal?
No, it's too small to be a dead seal. Let's go catch up with him.
All right, Baxter, calm down. Calm down, for God's sake, dog. And whatever it is that you got there, let go.
Baxter, drop it. Now.
Baxter, drop it. What is it?
It looks like a bottle.
Oh, cool. I wonder if there's a message inside.
Oh, don't be daft, Eddie. That only happens in... Oh, wait. Hang on. Wait a minute, you might actually be right for once in your life.
Well, wouldn't that be amazing?
No, there's definitely something in here. I can't see through the glass very well. It's too dirty, and the stopper is sealed up tight. Look, it's an old-fashioned glass one. Ugh, it's all crusted over with salt and barnacles, and
Ah, ugh, goo, stuff, ooh, Need to get rid of it before working on the stopper. Oh, God, it's all over my hands now. That's gross.
Don't wipe that stuff on me, you horrible beast. I'm not a dish rag. Wash it off in the sea.
There, that's better. Well, then, looks like I have to figure out a way of getting in here without damaging the bottle.
You could just smash it. Look, there's a rock. The bottle isn't the important thing. It's the note inside you want.
Are you kidding? This is old. You can tell by the shape of the bottle. Maybe hundreds of years old. I'm not going to smash it. It might be worth something. No, let's take it home. Soak it in some warm water and soak for a bit. See what happens. Have you got a plastic bag? Here, use this. Thanks, love. Oh, come on, dog. Let's get you and this old thing home. Give you both a bath, eh?
What's up with Baxter?
God knows. Come on, stupid dog. Your bath awaits. Almost there. I will clean you up good and proper, I promise. And whatever you've got inside you, I'll get to it. If I have to do this all night, I'll get that note. Yeah. Almost got that horrid goo off of the stopper. Come on. Yeah, almost there. Right, that's it, I think. Yeah, oh, all the crusty, sticky crap has gone, so all I've got to do now is try and lever this stopper out somehow. Yeah, come on, come on. Maybe I need something sharp to poke under the stopper rim. Let's just see. Let me try this. Oh, come on, you bastard, come on. I know you've got something juicy for me inside you. I can see it flapping around in there through the glass. I refuse to let a sodding bottle get the better of me. I will find out what's in there, even if it... Oh, bugger it.
Whoa, what'd you do that for? I thought you said it was valuable.
I lost patience with it.
Well, I can see that, yeah. I mean, look at this mess everywhere, though. We'll have to keep Baxter out of here.
But look, Eddie, there was a note in the
bottle.
Careful,
David. There's glass everywhere. You don't want it...
Oh, ow, ow, damn it. Bloody bastard thing.
You okay?
No, I'm not okay. I've got a flaming glass splinter in my finger. Ow! God, that hurts like billy-o. Oh, yeah, and don't say I told you so, or I'll throttle you.
That's a bit extreme, darling.
Here, let me see. Hey, get off! You'll just make it worse. Don't touch me!
Fine. I was only trying to help. Sort it out yourself, then.
Oh, look, I'm sorry, Eddie. I didn't mean to...
No, it's fine. You're a big boy. You can handle it yourself. Now, if you'll excuse me, I don't feel too well, David. I'm going to bed.
Okay.
You coming?
No, I think I'll stay down here for a bit. I hope you feel better soon.
Thanks.
Night. So, there was, in fact, a message in the bottle. Chances of it still being readable after all this time are pretty slim, I know, but still... Okay, so let's do this. God knows how old it is, but it looks like parchment. I should be careful unrolling this, it might disintegrate. It looks very fragile. Oh, wow, there is writing. Some of it's gotten a bit damp, maybe condensation inside the bottle at some point. Yeah, I can't read this section here or there, but some of it is still legible. Unbelievable. The handwriting is old, maybe Old English? I can make out some of the words. They are just spelt a little differently to modern English. Oh, I think this bit here is Latin. Morteque malorum. I wonder what that means. Morteque malorum. I'll be quiet, Baxter. Eddie's trying to sleep. Stupid dog. Should have had him neutered. That would have sorted him out. It's got a ring to it, though. Morteque malorum. Morteque malorum. I'm fairly sure morteque means death. At least morte sounds like mortem, which I think is Latin for death. Maybe I should just Google it, save myself the misery of wondering. Oh, my finger's sore. Should see to that splinter, really, but... Morteque malorum. Okay. Search. Shit! Oh, fuck that shit. Oh, that scared the life out of me. No idea what that was. I'm a bag of nerves today for some reason. Oh no. No. And my phone is smashed. Great, not only smashed, but it won't turn on either. Wonderful, glorious, spiffing, top-notch. Oh well, maybe it's time I got a new one anyway, especially if it's going to freak out and make horrible noises at me for absolutely no apparent bloody reason. Yes, Baxter, that's exactly how I feel too. One injured finger, one broken bottle, one smashed phone, and all I have to show for it is a smudged old piece of parchment with a cryptic phrase on it. And I still don't know what it means. Bedtime for me, I think. Better put this parchment somewhere safe first. I'll wrap it in this tea towel for now. Yeah, find a shoebox. Why do we still have this? Yep, there we go. Morteque malorum. What? Oh, Jesus. David, get the alarm.
Just a second.
Thank you. Good sleep. How's your hand?
I did sleep well, thanks. And... Oh,
right. Oh, my God. David, your hand! Is that the one with the glass splinter? It's gone, it?
No.
It doesn't look right, does it?
No, it doesn't, Eddie. Thanks for that.
It looks like dead skin around the wound. It's all black and hard. But it can't have gone that bad. Not already. Oh, I need some tweezers. Wait, didn't you pull a splinter out last night before bed? Or did you just leave it to fester in there overnight?
I was preoccupied. I dropped my phone and Baxter started howling and I just forgot.
Honestly, I sometimes feel like you've forgotten how to be an adult, David. No wonder it looks horrendous. God knows what kind of dirt and filth from that manky old bottle has gotten into you as well. Stay there. I'll get the tweezers. Jesus! David, get in here now!
What is it now? Honestly, can't we just get through one single day without some sort of drama or... Oh my God.
What the... What the hell is this? You tell me, David.
What?
You came to bed after I did.
You don't think I did this, do you?
Well, who else would it be? Baxter? I think even he would find it difficult to write the same two words in giant red letters over and over again on the walls of our bathroom, David. I mean, let's skip over the fact that his Latin is a bit rusty. What the hell were you thinking? What does it even mean? Morteque malorum? Is this idea of some sort of highbrow joke? I didn't write this on the walls, for God's sake. I came to bed not long after you. I have no idea where this came from, I'm telling you. Well, perhaps you must have done it in your sleep, babe. I didn't write it, and Baxter certainly didn't write it. And the only other alternative is that someone broke in and wrote this nonsense all over our bathroom walls. Which, quite honestly, I don't even want to entertain as a viable notion. Here are the tweezers. I'm going to get some cleaning stuff. Scrub this all off. Eddie, can you do me a favour? What, you mean aside from clearing up your mess? I really need you to Google something on your phone for me. I tried to last night and my phone broke. So you said you dropped it. I dropped it because it made this hideous noise when I tried searching for something. I'm wondering if you can try.
Now?
Yeah. This minute? Yeah.
Oh, fine. What is it?
Well, it's what's written on the walls, actually. And here's the thing. These same two words were, well, they were kind of written on the note I found inside the bottle.
You're not serious.
Deadly.
Okay.
I still think this is some weird, elaborate prank you're trying to pull on me, but fine, I'll go get my phone.
Okay.
I have my phone. You better not be messing with me, David. I'm very tired and I've got a lot to do today. Plus, I have a sore throat. Do you really think I wrote this in my sleep? I mean, what with? We don't own any red marker pens, do we? You don't think it's... Oh, for God's sake, babe, it's not blood. Look. I don't know what it is, but I do know it's not blood. Here, I'll taste it to prove it to you.
No, don't do that.
Doesn't really taste of anything at all. Very bland. Not going to take off as Ben and Jerry's next ice cream flavour, that's for sure. Definitely not blood. So whatever you wrote all this stuff with must be in the house somewhere. Now then, why do you want me to Google this? It was on the note in the bottle. I want to know what it means. If I did write this in my sleep, there has to be a reason why. Fair enough. Here goes. Morteque malorum. Search. Here we go. Oh, lovely. What? Morteque malorum means death from evil things. What? And how come your phone works when mine...
Shh.
I'm reading. Yeah. According to this, it translates as just that, death from evil things. I found an excerpt here from a web article about medieval curses, if you can believe that. Curses?
Mm-hmm.
It says here that cursing another person was quite a common practice during the Middle Ages. Medieval librarians used to add curses into their books even to prevent people from stealing or damaging them. They went into great detail about what would happen if you didn't bring the book back because they were so valuable then. It's why so many books had chains attached to them in medieval libraries. Something being nicked all the time. A curse was just another way to protect them, I suppose. Oh, look. Oh, here's a good one. Whomsoever shall steal this book or take it away, let him be roasted in a frying pan. May the falling sickness and fever attack him. May he be rotated on a breaking wheel and hanged. Amen. Blimey. Nice. Oh.
Yeah, look, here we go. I found the use of the words in context. It's from a book curse found on a manuscript with a commentary on the harmony of the Gospels from Evesham Abbey. Listen. Morteque malorum, raptor libri moriatur. Oh, and here's the translation. Death from evil things, may the thief of this book die. Huh. Actually, that's kind of cool. Imagine some little old monk scribbling horrible curses onto books and parchment with a quill pen by the light of a tallow candle. So, you're telling me the note in the bottle was a curse? Well, looks that way. If you believe in that sort of thing, which I don't. It's only an old bit of paper, after all. Don't tell me you believe in any of that stuff. Really? After all these years together and suddenly you're superstitious. I really don't remember writing this stuff on the walls, Eddie. I've explained that, silly. You were sleepwalking. This stuff was fresh on your mind and you found an old marker pen or something and went all Picasso on the walls. It's fine. Weird stuff happens every now and then. It doesn't mean you're cursed. Curses aren't real. They're old superstitious traditions for a time when this stuff was more commonplace. They thought witches were real back then too. Remember? Oh, goodness. I seem to have a frog in my throat all of a sudden. Yeah, this is what happens when I don't have my morning coffee within 10 minutes of waking up. It's just weird things have been happening since we found that bottle, and I sort of wish I'd never brought the damn thing back. Plus, my finger, it really hurts. Let me see. Yeah, we need to get that damn splinter out as soon as possible. Oh, God, David. Look, the dead skin is spread. How is that even possible? It looks... necrotic. Eddie, are you okay? You've gone very red in the face. Eddie?
We need to get that splinter.
Eddie, speak to me. You're scaring me. Eddie, you're choking. Eddie, wake up. Eddie. I know Baxter. I miss him too. Yes, dog, we can go home in a bit. I know it's cold. It's just... we have something to do. Remember that old bottle you found here just 2 weeks ago? Yeah. Feels like a lifetime ago, doesn't it? Well, I did a stupid thing, Baxter. I took it home and I smashed it and I found some parchment inside it. And instead of leaving well enough alone, I took that parchment out and read what was written on it. And then... well... And then Eddie died. And my hand, well... I lost that too. At least it wasn't my throwing hand. It's nothing compared to... well... I'd happily chop off every limb of my body to get Eddie back if I could. Yeah. Yeah, I know. I'd better get on with it. I hope this is the right thing to do. I don't know, dog. What do you think? I mean, it came out of the sea. Makes sense to put it back into the sea where we found it. I know it's a different bottle, but at least I sealed it up tight. And yes, before you ask, I did try to destroy the parchment. I tried burning it, blending it, pouring acid and bleach on it. I tried microwaving it, shredding it. Nothing worked. Not a thing. And so this is the only thing I can think of to do. Stick it back in a bottle and throw it back in the sea. Okay. Ready? Yeah. Me too. There. Good riddance.
strange. Baxter, come away from the ocean. I think we should go. Come on, Baxter, let's go quickly before... What's this? It looks like a bottle with a message inside. I do wonder what it says.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Thank you.
And that was Message in a Bottle, written by Gemma Amore. And I am joined, and I'm sure he appreciates me saying this, by the entire cast, Mr. David Ault.
Finally, thank you so much. It is so good to be back to the old team again. Just the two of us. And just you know, me as the entire cast in the episode. It's like season one. It's great.
I can't believe Jake and Alana, Erica and Gemma all had those terrible accidents at the same time.
I know. It was, yes. Well, you know, you shouldn't be playing with pylons or anything like that.
You know, we'll know if David kills anyone because they'll all die the way that doctors have regenerated. Jake had to absorb all of that radiation. Alana had to absorb the time vortex.
Mm-hmm. It's true. And
you've lost me now.
And Gemma, it was all those spiders.
Long-term, never seen Doctor Who person, I have no idea what you're talking about at all.
So listeners may remember, and if you don't remember, you should remember, that Gemma wrote the fantastic story Let Sleeping Gods Lie in season one, and in the discussion I found it a little strange to speak for Gemma, so being a good feminist, I decided not to erase Gemma's voice, and we invited her on to thank her and talk about and me be threatened by her good writing in season two.
That's such a nuanced statement, Mark. There's a lot to unpack there, but I'm going to say thank you anyway for having me.
Well, this is it. It's like, and then whenever we invite the guests on, it's like, well, what if you're wittier than me? Which is going to happen.
Well, and then there is a very, very real possibility that might happen.
True.
But I think you're just going to have to suck it up, buttercup, and deal with it. Talking of Sleeping God's Lie, I might revisit that particular character. I rather liked writing about archaeology and Egyptology, and I rather liked his character. I thought I might return to him at some point, although I don't want to do a Troughton either. I think there's a recurring Troughton storyline. I don't want to mirror that too much. But
it's a shame they live in different time periods almost.
Well, this is true. Maybe he's an ancestor. Maybe an old ancestor of Troughton, perhaps.
Oh, and like Russell T. Davis, the ancestor will sound and look identical.
I mean, they do sound very similar. Yeah.
The archaeologist is a little bit more... he's got a slightly more posh voice than Troughton.
He has. I think there's something about that, though. I think there's something about the fact that Shadows at the Door is such a British or English or whatever the correct term is, sounding show in that kind of more classical style, that the themes of history keep popping up, I think, in my stories, and I like that because they come across quite, it's quite an evocative thing, isn't it, historical horror. I think that works quite well for Shadows at the Door because of the music and the pacing and the voices. So
we've got a niche.
Yeah, I think that's what I tried to do, segueing into the story.
Oh.
With this story, because I remember reading about two things which fascinated me, things that always fascinated me, is the concept of a chained library, like an old medieval library in a cathedral, or there's various remaining libraries in Europe, where the books are kind of chained to the shelves with these big, thick, heavy chains. And I think Game of Thrones had a scene in a couple of libraries where the books were all chained in. And just very evocative imagery. And the history behind it is that books in those days were so valuable that they had to be chained to the shelves to stop people from stealing them. It took years and years and years to put a book together in those days. Everything was handwritten on parchment or vellum and hand-illustrated by monks and bound in leather. So they were highly valuable objects. And then that, as I fell down that research rabbit hole for this story, I came across the idea of book curses, medieval book curses. Yeah, so I came across the idea of book curses, and I found out that it was quite common in the medieval era for monks to write foul curses on the pages of their books or on pieces of parchment and stuff and put them in the books, so that if anybody did steal one of these valuable tomes, they were cursed to hell. And that's where the kind of crux of the story for Message in the Bottle came from, because it's about a young man who discovers a bottle, and inside is a piece of paper, and there's a very mysterious Latin phrase written on the piece of paper, and that turns out to be a book curse.
I was just thinking, actually, I might go to Waterstones and chain a copy of White Pines to the wall. And it's like, why, copies of White Pines are just flying off the shelf. We we have to pin this down.
Maybe wait until I fixed all the typos in the first chapter. That would be good. There's just loads of typos in it. which missed the final edit. But yeah, I like the concept of historical horror. It's something that I'd really like to explore a bit more. And I have real fun with it. It's fun to read about ancient curses. And in Bath Spa, in the town of Bath, there's a museum connected to the spa, and there are sheets of lead, curled lead, with Roman inscriptions on, and the Romans used to inscribe curses on for people that they hated and sort of fold them up and throw them into the spa, into the waters of the spa. And there's a kind of an appeal to the gods, and there are all sorts of like trivial things. It's, you know, jealous girlfriends and neighbours that they've fallen out with, and the tax man, and it's brilliant. And the theme of a curse has been in our history for so many thousands of years. And I love that, and I think I'd like to explore that a bit more. So,
because you even see that in the HBO series of Rome.
Yes.
Where the lead was inscribed and then actually put into a crack in the building of the recipient of the curse.
Yeah, I loved that series. That was awesome.
It's very sexy, if I remember.
Yeah.
It was pre-Game of Thrones, Game of Thrones, really.
I just finished watching The Great, which is all about Catherine the Great, and there's so much sex in that. But whenever a man goes down on a woman, it's treated as very novel and something that just doesn't ever happen.
Well, it might not have done quite so commonly back then. I don't know. Catherine, wasn't she the one that had lots of things with horses?
Yeah.
There was that's the great rumour. It was rumoured that she died having sex with a horse. But in the show, they start that rumour long before she died.
Nice. Well, I hope so, because it'd be a really boring TV show, wouldn't it?
One thing I quite liked about this story is when you sent me the script, you said, oh, well, you know, the character of the partner could be a man or a woman, you know, as it should be. Because, you know, it's not like, oh, Gemma, I need you to write a gay couple. Ah, oh, excellent. I can whip out all of my Kenneth Williams quotes. So
I think, so full disclosure for the listeners at home, we've actually recorded this conversation once before, and I remember covering this point off before. But because we recorded it at the same time as Drunk Ghost Stories 3, David and Mark both told me to get drunk, so I did, and then I forgot to hit record, so that didn't survive. So we are going back over this for the second time, and I think what I said the first time around, and then I've been thinking about that more since. It's quite good, actually, because I've had time to think about that point a little bit more and formulate a slightly more cogent answer than the last time you asked me when I was pissed. I think with a lot of the stuff that I write now, one of the things I've noticed in the way that I write stories, and perhaps part of that is because of writing for the No Sleep podcast and leaving things fairly open for them, because you never really know whose recording schedules are free, but also I like to leave characters open to interpretation, individual interpretation. So when I write at the moment, I tend to find that I leave a lot of the physical details of a person out and the characteristics of them out. So I may say if they're male or female, I might not. I tend to not really discuss skin colour too much, or sexuality, or, you know, I mean, obviously if there's a couple and they're in a relationship, it's fairly obvious. But I try and keep the personal details fairly light. Because I do think, particularly with audio drama, it's a really good opportunity to just see what happens, just see who gets the script and see what they do with it. And I like that. And I haven't heard the story yet, but I'm looking forward to hearing what David does with David and Eddie playing both characters at the same time. And I like the dynamic of a male couple as well. It's a slightly different dynamic, I think, from a female-female couple, or a male-female couple, or non-binary couple. It's just, I think the dynamics are slightly, subtly different, depending on how you read it. So I'm looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm.
Also not forgetting Baxter the dog, who...
Who David also plays.
Does it? Well, I was going to ask. Who are you? In my mind was more of a Labrador, if that helps.
It doesn't, because when I'm getting the sound files, I just get whatever dog I can get. I can just go for big or small dog. And
you take so much pride in your work. I love
do.
That.
No, David does do a good job of playing the entire cast. I was going to play the stranger who finds the bottle on the beach at the end, but I thought, you know what? Why not just have it an all David extravaganza? Give the people what they want.
It's an opportunity to display his versatility.
Yeah. I quite like hearing David bicker with himself as well. Like, he doesn't send me them. Like, oh, okay, this is all of Eddie, this is all of David. It's just him going, oh, get out of bed, you lazy bastard. No, I'm not getting out of bed, it's dead comfy. And
thank you.
He's just bickering with himself.
I can imagine David walking around his house at home doing that anyway, though. I walk around my house and talk to myself constantly when I'm on my own. It's how I sort things out in my head.
Yeah.
Particularly when I'm recording in the booth as well. I chunter away to myself, and then I have to spend about 40 minutes editing out all the chuntering.
Well, when you sent me the recording for Blessed Be the Man, I think there was some construction work going on outside, and every now and again I would just hear Gemma stop going, I'm going to die in this booth. But I guess it's like when I record the intros to these episodes, I actually have to do them at midnight in my bedroom, because until the house is finished being redecorated and my recording booth is done, there's so much traffic on the front street that I have to edit this out when we're in the discussion. So I get that.
I have a pigeon that likes to sit on the chimney, and the chimney breast is right next to the booth. So all you can hear in like intervals when I'm not talking is a pigeon going coo in the background. Bastards. Hate pigeons.
I live near an RAF training facility,
nice.
So occasionally I will hear.
I am using this as Foley in the next episode.
Yeah. Sounds like me when I'm having sex. I've been told, I don't know, I'm not present really.
That's staying in.
That is staying in. Ah, Gemma, that was excellent. You did sound like a sad cat. But yeah.
It's because I am a sad cat, Mark. I'm such a sad cat.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Once more with feeling. Talking of sad cats and outsides, but I'm sure I've told this story before, but why not do it again? The time I was in India and trying to record with no windows, because
wow.
We don't want windows in hot countries. And two kittens outside the door that desperately wanted to come in. Yeah, that was an interesting 6 months of recording.
Why were you recording in India?
Oh, because I was part of a load of audio dramas. And
I
was away for 6 months.
I bet India is the least quiet country in the entire planet.
Pretty much, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it was, it was a challenge to A, find somewhere, B, find somewhere that was remotely padded-ish.
Yeah.
And C, be able to keep up with everything.
I think we need a full cast. Obviously David Ault, but the other meaning of full cast drunk stories. I think everybody.
Do you know how hard
brilliant.
That would be to
it
edit?
Would be or like do like a live recording with everybody, perhaps with a few drinks.
I feel like David's been speaking to you off camera.
Yeah. No, is that what was that your idea?
Oh yeah,
as well?
I want to do a live stream.
This is really
it?
Fucking subtle.
Yeah, no, yeah, I'd love to do a live stream. Yeah, let's do that. I'd love to do that. Come on, Mark.
Come on, Mark.
Oh.
Come on. People will love it. You see how they eat up the no sleep stuff. They love it.
Yeah, I know, but we're not. Like, we don't have the same listenership as
doesn't
no sleep.
Doesn't matter. It's
yet.
All good content.
Exactly.
And if people find your podcast through YouTube as a result as well, then it's more
Look, if people
listeners.
Want a live show, bombard me on Twitter and you may change my mind. David's keen. Apparently Gemma's keen.
Right, I'm going to tweet
keen.
Now.
Who else? Oh, of course, Jake's keen.
Would people like to see a live stream? performing a live script, because I could make that my next script.
Hooray!
If you like. And then you can also release that on your podcast channel as well, like the audio of that on the podcast channel. And then it's extra
if
content.
If listeners listen very carefully, they can hear my arm being twisted.
Tweet. Sorted.
Hmm. But there's no... Gemma, this is a fixed poll. This is like George Bush's election win. There's no. Where is the Al Gore option, Gemma?
Because
where
you have, you have to think positive about these things, don't you?
There you go, you've got a vote.
Positive affirmation.
Well, I'm used to everything I vote for not going the way I want these days. So.
Well, exactly, yeah. Democracy is a wonderful thing, except when it doesn't work for us.
Yeah.
Tyranny of the majority. So, Gemma, I know one thing that you talked about in the last one was how Jumanji had influenced you and the scene on the beach.
Yeah, and so, yes, so the final scene of the story where the curse in the bottle is... The curse has been rebottled and flung back into the ocean and a poor, unsuspecting individual picks it up. There was always... I always loved that, the idea from the original Jumanji movie of this kind of cursed board game. And I just love the idea of this, like, indestructible curse that just went on and on and on, and the idea of things being handed down from person to person or generation to generation. And that the final scene in Jumanji where the board game washes up on a beach in France and two unsuspecting small French children pick it up. And and it's just, I loved that idea that it would just carry on ad infinitum and just go round and round and round forever. And I think that's something with curses as well, that there seems to be no time frame on curses. I think a lot of the ghost stories you read and the horror stories where curses are central to it. And that, like the movie Drag Me to Hell, which is a really good example of a kind of a gypsy curse. And
I'm trying not to say it, but a lot of people listening will know I have to share this. Drag Me to Hell is based on M.R. James's Casting the Runes.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Oh, sorry, I had to get that out. I feel better
now. Do you
feel
better now? Okay, good.
Yeah, I feel like I've just had a bowel movement.
That explains how you feel about Casting the Runes.
Yeah. But the idea is that she feels like she's defeated the curse at the end. The girl feels that she's defeated this curse at the end, and then you find out in the final spoiler alert that she hasn't. And I love that enduring sense that words and cursed words and evil words just go on and on and on forever. I think there's something quite chilling about the idea that you can never win against that sort of thing. So it's just potluck as to whether or not you stumble across it.
They do the same in It Follows, which has very similar themes to Drag Me to Hell, where the couple walking at the end, there's someone following them in the back, and of course it could just be a normal person, but it could also be the sexually transmitted ghost.
It's a very good film. That there's one of the scariest
one of
the scariest scenes I think I've ever seen.
And also you have things like The Ring as well.
Yes.
which has the same idea of if you stumble across the videotape, then you have to copy
M.R.
it.
M.R. James!
Yeah. The Japanese version recently was available to rent on Google Play. It had not been available for years, and I've had it on my watch list because I haven't seen it since I was about 18, 19. And I rewatched it. God damn, that film holds up so well.
Oh, yes.
It's just, I think for me, one of the defining moments of my like younger years when I was getting back into horror. And then I remember I was at university and I was watching Ringu with a friend of mine in my small room, and it was pitch dark. And the scene where, is it Sadako? I think it's Sadako. She crawls out of the television, that kind of seminal scene, that one that everybody knows. And the first time I saw that, it was just the most chilling thing I think I've ever seen in a movie. And it just stayed, the imagery stayed with me. And it's been done so many times since. It's just, it doesn't really have.
It's been ruined by scary.
It just doesn't, as many things, but it just doesn't have the same effect on you anymore. But the first time I saw it at the tender age of 19, 20, however old I was, it had such a lasting effect on me. Just a brilliant piece of filmmaking, such an original concept. And Yeah, the idea of curses that just keep going around like the ring cycle just forever and ever and ever.
And interesting then, yeah, that it's one of those examples of someone using an everyday object to make a massive impact. So there it was, the TV.
Yeah. Yeah,
and the video and something coming on. One of the, and I know that Mark is going to leap up at this, but one of the things about Doctor Who in its early years was the fact that the police boxes were everywhere, and so that was a way of providing that sort of fantastical escape for kids. You know, this was something. It didn't look like a spaceship. It looked like something that was on the corner of the street.
An everyday object. I'm really glad you said that, because I think. As I write more and more short stories, and short stories are probably my comfort zone over novels, I think a lot of my short stories are based around the concept of an object and just an everyday object being somehow disastrous in some way, shape or form. So I wrote a story that not many people like called Jack in the Box. And it was about a jack-in-a-box that a man bought for his wife and just other things. I'm writing one at the moment about... it's called A Single Set of Silver Spoons, and it's about an antique set of spoons, because I think objects are so evocative. And there's a whole discussion around personalization, and there's lots of different words for it, but the idea of imbuing characters and themes into inanimate objects is a long-standing one in literature, and I'm obsessed with it. I love the idea of personalizing the inanimate and giving it a sinister aspect and giving it something that you wouldn't think of, you know, to like a key. Keys are another one. Keys are very evocative symbology that props up all over the place, and jewelry and lockets and and I think with this story as well, it's the idea of the message in a bottle. It's a really simple object, you know. You might just come across it on the beach as it's washed up, and your life changes, and your arm falls off and you get swept away by the ocean and your husband dies.
And of course, who wouldn't pick up a bottle that looked like it had been in the sea for ages and then take it home and wash it and open it and see what's inside? It's just one of those things where you would do it.
You would. And I think that's where my obsession with archaeology comes from as well, because I love the idea of objects from the past, swords and jewellery and costume and artifacts. Like, I just, I'm writing a novel about a series of objects at the moment, and each one is a significant object in a person's life, and they're displayed in a kind of gallery on a pedestal. And it's all about how your brain also, throughout the course of your life, your brain automatically fixes on some things that are more significant than others. So throughout the course of your life, you'll wander through the world and you'll take in thousands, if not millions, of objects, none of which really mean anything to you. It's just noise. But there'll be a few things in your life that you have that you've kept in a memory box or that are really significant to you that your brain pulls to the forefront and that your consciousness fixates upon. And I think that as a storytelling device is just something that I'm just desperate to explore a bit more. It's really fascinating to me. There's a word for it, and I've forgotten the word because all my research is on a different document, but there's a word for why the brain selectively focuses on some objects preferentially over others. And it's apparently a survival technique as well. So when mankind was developing, you know, their hunting skills and all the rest, it teaches you how to focus on the things that might be a threat or might be of benefit to you over the things that aren't. So
it's like a cultural meme, respect.
I guess so, yeah.
Stephen King has this theory of sorts that he puts into some of his books, which I absolutely adore, which is like if enough bad things happen in a place, that place will
soak up.
Soak it up, and like the Marsden House in Salem's Lot, and of course the Overlook in The Shining. And I love that, and it's such a good concept. It's very hard not to, for lack of a better word, steal.
So I was just going to say, you definitely feel that. For instance, in the workhouse in Ripon, there is definitely that a very. It's not a nice feeling going in there at all, and even sort of 70 years. Oh no, hang on. It was used as an old folks' home right up until the 1970s, I think.
Yeah.
And it was the last time it was used as a workhouse was 40, 50 years. But so it's been almost a century since it was a workhouse. But even then, the feeling doesn't go away.
And how much of that as well is because we know that bad things took place there.
Then
we imbue it with our own sense of atmosphere, a perceived atmosphere, and how much of it is because perhaps there is a resonance of some sort or... And I think, so if you look at, again, going back to the classical texts like Charlotte Perkins Gilman and The Yellow Wallpaper, she wrote an entire horror story about a woman going insane and suffering from PTSD or postnatal trauma or whatever it was, based around some wallpaper. You know, it's the idea that the wallpaper came to life in her brain and the woman who was creeping behind the pattern. And it's such an effective and simple... like writing device is to just fix on an object and make that the crux of the story, and I love that idea.
This may be a damning analysis of my own ego, but I wrote a story in Durham Cathedral for Shadows at the Door, the anthology, available now, and and I did so much research. I did a ridiculous, unnecessary amount of research for this story, and I found like this little secret about the cathedral which I put into the story. And whenever I have since visited the cathedral after writing this story, I feel a bit creeped out. And it's like, it's my own fucking story.
Yeah.
And someone goes, oh, we're off to see the cathedral. I'm like, careful of the ghost.
You've layered your own mythology onto the place. And now that affects how you perceive it. And this is why I think ghost tours and stuff are so effective. If you go to a haunted house knowing you're going to go on a ghost tour, you already tuned in.
You're primed.
And maybe this is why seances were so popular and successful back in the day as well, because you were deliberately sitting down to communicate with the dead. So you'd opened yourself up to that possibility, which made you much more susceptible to believing it before you'd even, you know, heard the oohs and the ahs and the breeze through the curtain and all the rest of it.
And there is there's the notion of the tulpa as well, where people's belief creates the thing itself.
Yes.
You know, Slender Man is considered to be a modern day tulpa.
Yeah.
Anyway, so speaking of Ilana, she's got an absolutely beautiful voice. I was very impressed.
Yes, so Ilana is not only an actor, but a singer-songwriter. And I'm very much a fan, and she kindly allowed me to use two of my favourite tracks in the episode. And it's just such a shame that I had to record me scribbling a bottle over it. I had to add reverb so it sounds like it's coming from like a Bluetooth speaker, and then David's grumbling over it. But if you listen very carefully, you can hear it. Or better yet, why not purchase the music from Ilana? I would really suggest checking out Ilana's stuff because it's incredible. And I'm always awed by the talent in the company I keep. Gemma's a fantastic writer and is now also a very good voice actor as well. And so I can stand a chance, as Jake is such a nice guy, and if you talk to him, he's got such a nice Arthur Darvill voice, and then yet he sounds like a right bastard in Slender Chances. And David's just a chameleon of the voice. How does that work?
This is for anybody not aware, this is Mark grovelling because he was very mean to David earlier on, in case it doesn't make the cut.
No, I wasn't.
He mocked him, and now he is trying to get back into David's good books, and David is having none of it.
I don't need to get into David's good books. Not after the moments we've shared.
The walls have gone up. You've got some scaling to do.
Well, no, it's like you do write for yourself, but then if somebody else turns around and says, I loved what you did, I mean...
Oh, yeah, but that's different. That's part of the process, but if you sit down and then tailor everything to what you think people will like rather than what you want to write, then that's not really being true to yourself.
If you desire people's approval, you will always be their prisoner.
Exactly, David. Ooh. Exactly. There we are. It's not about seeking approval.
But
it's about
at the same time,
you.
If people want to tell me I'm pretty now and again, that's fine.
Well, okay. Well, you are pretty, except when you're in a real grump like you are this morning. Like, Roald Dahl said, if you think nice things, they will shine out of your face like sunbeams.
Roald Dahl was also an anti-Semite, but I get it.
He was. But the point is...
And he invented the concept of gremlins and aeroplanes.
Oh,
he did. Yeah, because in World War II, when planes would break and they didn't know what was causing the problem, I think they would say it was gremlins. And Roald Dahl wrote a movie about gremlins for Disney, which I don't think ever got released, or it's not ever since been re-released.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, because he was in the army. And then, of course, Richard Matheson came up with one of my favorite ever short stories, which then went on to be in The Twilight Zone.
The Twilight Zone,
The Gremlin.
Variations of that have come out since, yeah.
So, this, listeners, is what happens when you get three people who are friends, but also somewhat colleagues, to record. You get a fucking nightmare of a conversation to edit. So, I do hope you've enjoyed this one, because I haven't edited it yet, obviously, but it's going to take some time.
It's going to be really boring as well. Yeah. Apologise in advance.
No, it won't be terribly boring. Just, you know... All of the scandalous stuff had to be taken out.
Yeah, the orgies and the, you know.
But, Mark, what can listeners expect in 2 weeks' time? That's the question.
Ah, well, in 2 weeks' time, we have... I don't know what to say about this one. In 2 weeks' time, listeners can look forward to an episode guest starring... Erica Sanderson. No Mia French cameo for her this time. She is the star of the show. Woo-hoo. And there's going to have to be a hell of a disclaimer at the beginning of that one, I think. So
content warnings at the end of this podcast for the discussion that's just gone. Content warnings for the beginning of the next podcast for what is to come. So it only really remains for us to say thank you to Gemma for writing the story and for coming on and sharing your thoughts with us.
Thank you for having me, boys. I do like talking to
you. Thank you, Gemma.
Always a pleasure.
Well, never a chore. Never a chore.
And Mark, thank you very much for all of your production, and thank you in advance for the amount of time you are going to be spending on this discussion. And to all of you listeners at home, thank you for listening, thank you for sharing, and for telling your friends about Shadows at the Door, the podcast, and of course for leaving all of your wonderful 5-star reviews. Thank you very much for that.
Can't wait for that live stream.
Indeed, yes. And look out for more news about the live stream coming soon.
I hate you all.
You've been listening to a Shadows at the Door production. Story by Gemma Amore. Performances by David Alt. Score by Nico Vitesi. Production by Mark Nixon. Music tracks Out of This and Play Nice, copyright Ilana Charnel, and used here with her kind permission. Production copyright Shadows at the Door Publishing 2020. Story copyright of the author. If you enjoyed this production, please consider leaving a review wherever you listen to podcasts, and we'll see you very soon.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.